Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks so much for tuning into the show that celebrates creating and stories. We're here on Division Street in downtown Northfield in the KYMN studios with the light snow happening. Wow, it is really turning to late fall very quickly, and it's the time, of course, we all start thinking about the holidays. Well, one of the things when I was a writing teacher that I would often ask my students to do during a holiday break was to pay attention to the conversations around big family meals. This is where the writer learns about how people talk to each other, share stories, establish relationships, and reveal character. Attentive listening and observation really does reveal a great deal about not only our stories, but our families. You may not think that a lot can be revealed during a family meal, but I say you would be wrong. It's a place where life happens and relationships are magnified. The holiday dining room table is often the start of a great story that gets carried on through generations. Things happen during those moments that become legends. And so I hope you're looking forward to sharing the table with family and friends this holiday season. It might be the first almost normal. Will it ever be normal? I don't know. Family gatherings don't seem to fall into that place. But it might be feel a little bit more like it used to this year. And imagine what's been saved up that we've missed during those last couple years. So there might be some drama. And I do love family drama, but not the kind that happens in real life, the kind that happens in a fictional world. And that is what we're going to talk about today. I'm very excited. Today in the Art Zany Radio Studio, we are going to talk about the fabulous play, The Humans. I haven't even seen it, but I already know that it's fabulous. Produced by the Paradise Community Theater at the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. And I'm going to turn on the mics because we have a crowd in the studio joining me today. Director Rachel Hyder. Welcome, Rachel.
Good morning, Paula. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And Bryn Artley, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. And then Taylor Weslin. Okay, I'm sorry. I should have asked you ahead of time.
No, that's totally okay. It's a quirky name.
It is. This is your first visit to the studio, so welcome.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about your world and your drama connections and your life in the theater.
Yeah, I'd love to. So my name is Taylor Weslin. I'm originally from Yankton, South Dakota. I actually just graduated from St. Olaf College, and my boyfriend and I relocated here during COVID, and we really enjoyed the area. So he's got a great job, and I'm starting to get back into community art making. I was a really big community theater person back home in Yankton. I started a group with a couple close friends, and I'm very excited to be back in a show like this. This is my second show at the Paradise, though I did The Hunchback of Notre Dame earlier in the summer.
Wonderful. It's a delight to have you here. And go ahead, Bryn, tell us a little bit about your world.
Yeah, I'm Bryn Artley. I grew up here in Dundas. Went to school at Northfield High School. Really got into theater at that time. And then I was really lucky to get to do some shows with Rachel. Did The Miracle Worker and Mansfield Park. Mm-hmm. And just love the productions that Rachel puts on. I went to school at Winona State University and just came back to the area here this year, decided to get involved in community theater again, was super excited to, this is my first production with The Paradise.
Well, wonderful to have you again, and I feel like you've been on for some other productions, for some of those high school productions too, but it's hard to believe that it's been that many years. Whoa,
Yeah, you and me both.
And Rachel, of course, you've been on many times. You're an extraordinarily talented director and have been doing a lot of amazing things in the community theater world. Tell us about what's happening for you and what's, since your last visit, what you've been doing in addition to the humans.
Well, yes, in addition to the humans, I'm about to embark on Newsies Junior with Purple Door Youth Theater.
We're all cheering for that one. Oh, it's going to be fantastic.
So that we actually start 1 week after this show closes. We start our rehearsals November 7th. But because of Christmas break and Thanksgiving break, we don't actually open until the first weekend in January.
Okay. But it's a show that requires that much
rehearsal. It is. Big undertaking, and we have incredibly talented kids in our community, so put it on your calendar.
Absolutely, we will. And that's going to be at the Arts Guild Theater.
That one is at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater. Yep. This is my fourth show down at the Paradise. I did Your Good Man Charlie Brown, Best Christmas Pageant Ever, and Miracle on 34th Street previously. Down there.
So you like the holidays with the Paradise.
Yep, but this is actually an interesting show because I would not at all call it a Halloween show, but there's a little creepiness to it, so it's nice to have it at Halloween, and of course it's centered around a Thanksgiving dinner, as you were mentioning, so we are so close to that. It's just beautiful timing.
Yeah, and in the description, it's Thanksgiving Day 2015. Stepping away from tradition, Eric and Deidre Blake are not hosting dinner this year. Instead, the Blake family gathers at the just-acquired rundown New York apartment of daughter Bridget and her boyfriend Richard. Bridget's parents have driven from their Scranton, Pennsylvania home, bringing along Eric's elderly mother, Momo, who has dementia. And then Bridget's sister, Amy, has also traveled from Philadelphia, where she works as a lawyer. And they try to figure out what it means to be family and explore all the love and cracks and all the pieces of being a family. And that I love those kinds of shows.
Right. And that is part of where the creepiness comes in the fact that this rundown apartment, it's a two-story apartment, so the lower level is actually basement level, zero windows. And then the next story up is, you know, garden level, as they call it.
Those New York apartments, yes.
So there's one window, and it's old. It's in Chinatown. It's an old brownstone. It's been around forever. It only has an interior courtyard that even is the view from this window. And so it has creaks and moans, and because they're in the basement, there are, you know, trash compactors and laundry room noises and these little things that are kind of reflective also of the family, of the fact that we all have these little creepy noises that happen in our lives. And and even some vermin. And so it's really, really well written on so many levels. And that's just one tiny piece of why this show is phenomenal and like something you have never, ever seen. And I highly recommend coming to.
That's a good preview. And I want to ask, so what connected both of you to want to audition for The Humans? Because that's not a show that's well known. I don't know which one he wants to jump in first.
I just took the plunge. Like I said, I'm getting back into community art making. So I saw the next show was a straight show and not a musical. And that's where my heart always has been, even though I majored in music in college. So I was just really excited to see such a small cast and intimate shows. I just haven't really had an opportunity to do. I'm so glad that The Paradise takes a chance on small person shows because not a lot of community theaters do. And so I was very excited that the show is offered.
And how about, did you know the play before?
I did not. I actually was a little intimidated when I heard it was going to be a drama, because I've previously mostly just done comedies, and I was like, oh boy, can I do this? So I remember before auditioning, I checked out a script from The Paradise, and I wanted to read the whole thing through and get a feel for it, and I just found it like a really moving story on how it kind of tackles the hard things in life. Like Rachel said, there's a very much a creepy element, but it's all about the real life scary stuff, the stuff that people don't really talk about, the family angst, the disillusionment with life. And I just really appreciated how this play tackles that subject matter head on. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be an adventure. Let's do this.
Oh, good.
But there's nothing depressing about the play.
No, not at all.
Amazing.
Yeah. Good. And there's some humorous moments I've heard in it. Like real life family, right? There's
right.
all those strange things that happen,
right.
and weirdness and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And this is opening at the Paradise Center for the Arts. It opens on the 21st, so next weekend. And folks can get tickets now at ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org. It is running for 2 weekends, so it's the 21st and 22nd, that Friday and Saturday, and then at 7:30, and then Sunday, the 23rd at 2 p.m., and again the following weekend, which must be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 27, 28, 29. And so that's an amazing opportunity. So people should get their tickets. The Paradise is a beautiful theater, not that far, just right down the road, really easy to find. And I want to talk about the title, because the title is The Humans, which sounds so like grand, like, wow, what are we going to see in this play? Is there any insight you can give us as far as audience members about, you know, the choice of that title? Because it feels so big.
Do you want to
sure. I think the title really comes from something that my my stage boyfriend, Richard, talks about is... it's a comic book called Quasar, and in this comic book, the monsters of the story are afraid of humans, and it's just this little interlude in the play. It's just Richard sharing this thing he likes, but he really kind of drives home this aspect of how interesting that the monsters are afraid of the humans rather than vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of becomes this metaphor for the rest of the play of as much as us, the humans, are scared of all the things that go bump in the night, maybe it's the humans that are actually the scariest thing of all.
Maybe it's us.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, I can see where that tone of creepiness comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that it's a play that maybe a lot of people don't know because it is so contemporary. I think it, where did I read the Tony? It winner of the 2016 Tony Award for Best Play, so that's a pretty phenomenal thing. And Bryn, you were saying this hasn't made the community theater circuit that much, so...
No, absolutely.
How did you connect to
not.
It and bring it here?
Actually, it's interesting. One of our cast members, Susan Dunhaupt.
Hello, Susan. We adore you.
One of her friends from many years back actually played the Deirdre character on Broadway. And then they subsequently made a film of this.
And that's the mom, right?
Right. That's
okay.
The mom. And actually, Susan is playing that role, too. So I just thought
perfect.
That was really a special connection. But so Susan was just telling me about how her friend was on Broadway and playing this show. And it just sounded fascinating to me. So I read the script and I just literally couldn't put it down. It was so fascinating. It's written in a very different way. The characters, it's exactly like sitting down at a family dinner. although we must make it clear that the whole show is not sitting around a table.
Oh yeah.
It's like any kind of family gathering. People talk on top of each other. They don't finish their sentences. They put in little barbs here and there. All of those wonderful things are just on the page, and even the playwright will give in parentheses the rest of the sentence that the person is trying to get out, but they don't actually ever get it out. So the actors really have this incredible depth of knowledge of how to get across what the words are on the page. And, you know, when we had auditions, I actually made everybody just talk because I wanted them to really get that feeling in their head of what it's like to just have a conversation and not recite lines.
Mm.
And you won't see acting in quotes in this show. This is just like sitting in somebody's living room. It's really amazing. And not every actor, I don't think, could, you know, rise to that challenge without a lot of rehearsal. But these guys really get it. It's just really amazing.
Yeah, we should give credit. The playwright is Stephen Kram, K-R-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like someone that we want to follow and figure out what else he's up to.
Right. And he also was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for Literature that year. So,
wow.
You know, for this particular show.
And so let's introduce the characters to, at least especially your two mm-hmm. characters. Tell us a little bit about... you know, who it is that you're playing, Taylor. Let's start with you.
Yeah, so I play Amy, the older sister. And as you said earlier, I'm a lawyer. I kind of seemingly have my life together. And then as the play unfolds, we start to discover that, things are slowly falling apart and Amy's not having the best year of her life. So that all kind of comes to the forefront during this play. So, it's very great character for me to jump back in. She has a lot of depth. She is dealing with ulcerative colitis. So that is an ongoing thing in the show. She recently broke up with her girlfriend and then of 3 years, correct? Yes. And she recently lost her job. So...
you can just see that happening in real life too. You know, someone's out on their own. You maybe chat for a few minutes. You don't really get into mm-hmm. all the things. And all of a sudden you're in this space for hours.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting juxtaposition to Bryn's character, Bridget, because she does have the new apartment, the newly established life, if you want to jump in.
Bridget's the baby of the family and she's got everything going for her.
this windowless apartment.
Hey, it's well, a big window.
Yeah, she talks it up.
So yes, tell us more about
Bridget,
her.
Bridget is very, very proud of her new apartment in New York. She feels kind of like a big kid now. And she's really kind of uptight over how she's hosting Thanksgiving for the first time for her family.
That is nerve-wracking.
Yeah, she's showing off her new apartment, her boyfriend, and there's just that tension of she wants everything to be perfect, and it is not.
When is Thanksgiving dinner ever perfect? I don't think it ever goes perfectly. And we should talk about the other characters, too, because we mentioned there's the mom and the dad mm-hmm. and the grandma, Momo, and the boyfriend, right? So anything we should know just to set the scene or set the stage for each of them?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish they could be in the room here with us because we're a cast of six.
It's very small.
Yep. But it's so, I don't know, I feel like we're so much more close-knit for it. Everyone just, I don't know, brings a really key component to this play. It's really fun. Like, we're all in our little spheres, and then we just keep colliding with each other.
Oh, that's a good description. And
my stage boyfriend, Richard, is played by Jonathan Larson. We have a lot of fun with our banter back and forth. We're not married in the show, and that's kind of a little bit of a source of conflict with Bridget's parents.
Ah.
But definitely kind of bicker like an old married couple. They love each other, but they also kind of are irritated by each other.
And what about the parents and Momo?
So our parents are definitely from a different generation, and I think that comes through in the way they think about like Bridget's apartment and her relationship with her boyfriend and their idea of how life should go. I'm trying to think if there's anything special, but there is an interesting divide between Eric and Deirdre. Eric seems to be a little more straight-laced, like, let's just get through and save face, while Deirdre doesn't seem to be able to put away all the things that are bubbling under surface. They have their own tensions within their marriage, and I think that comes through a little bit in the play, seeing Bridget and Richard's relationship.
And so Eric is played by Frank Blomgren. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, Deirdre is played by Susan Dunhopt. And then we have Momo. Cindy Robinson is taking on that part. That sounds, she is, as we mentioned, or is that not in that description, that she's suffering from Alzheimer's?
Mm-hmm. Well, from dementia. They never actually
name
call it Alzheimer's.
Okay.
I'm super excited to be getting a chance to work with Cindy Robinson. I've really been a fan of her work over the years, and I just haven't ever, we just, our paths haven't crossed that way. But Cindy she's a petite woman, which really I think brings just a wonderful aspect to this character, because she spends most of the time in a chair, and whether it be a wheelchair or the couch or whatever, her costume will make her even more diminutive, which is just really it's just really interesting when you think about dementia and how it can crush a person's soul. And yet this family is so supportive of their grandmother, of their Momo, and really want to include her at times and such. And yet there are other times where she almost just gets forgotten. You know, she's sitting right there with them, but because she can't engage as much, it's very easy to overlook her. It's so fascinating, and Cindy will tell you that it's been an incredibly difficult character to play. She has someone in her family with dementia. Susan has someone in her family. Bryn has her grandmother, and you know it is something that is touching so many lives. Especially, I think through COVID, it seems to have really even developed more, and so it's. I think it's a painful thing to have to play, and yet incredibly freeing in some ways too. The dialogue that she has is pretty much gobbledygook if you look at it on the page, and yet I told her right at the beginning. I said, "You need to memorize what Stephen Krem wrote."
That's a challenge. Wow.
But what was really neat about it was, as she really started to get into it and memorize it and everything, she's like, oh, wait a minute. She's actually saying some things here that are decipherable.
Mm.
Just in a, you know, when it's written on the page like that, it's just sort of all smooshed together and stuff. So, it is fabulous. And she will blow you away. Mm-hmm. She's really great.
Yeah, and it's so it does sound like it has a lot of these themes that we can all connect to wherever we are in the, you know, whether we're more close to the parents or grandparents or the kids who are moving out and stepping out in their own. So that sounds like the kind of play I want to see. Again, it's The Humans at the Paradise Center for the Arts. It is opening next weekend, Friday the 21st, and runs for 2 weekends. Tickets available at paradisecenterforthearts.org. And it is just, it sounds absolutely fabulous. I want to talk about rehearsals. And I wonder, because what you've told us about this, you know, make it natural, make it a conversation. How did you begin that process of, you know, playing a family? Did you have to practice first being a family? I was curious how you make that comfortable on the stage when you're acting. And as she said, you don't want to look like you're acting, reading lines. You want to look like you're just chatting. How did you do that?
Well, we would start a lot of rehearsals having conversations. I am fairly new to everyone. I was the only one that hasn't worked with this group of people before. So I definitely am still getting to know who these people are as people and not just their characters. So that was an interesting layer for me as an actor to navigate. But we did have some family bonding nights. We'd go to the pub across the street and have a drink and just chat. Mm-hmm. And talk about our own theater experiences. And I think that was a pretty essential building block in creating our family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like with any production, there's that getting to know you period where you're just all of it like, oh, who are you? We're going to be interacting in this space together. But this show in particular, it just was like, because the cast is so small, the subject matter is just so intimate that it was so key to really get to know each other and to trust each other and just really trying to I don't know, make it seem natural because like you said, it's not acting. It's just, hey, let's go occupy this space together and explore these themes. And it's really been an adventure in that way that has been unlike any other production that I know I've been a part of.
Mm-hmm. How have you connected with your character to try to bring out that natural, you know, way that banter and interaction?
That's a great question. I think that was actually part of our like social media thing where we talked about how we identify with our characters. And I'm so glad that we did that because that gave me so much to think about.
What do you mean social media?
Oh, on Instagram, the Paradise Community Theater has been posting little like biography and introductions of us and how we connect to our characters. But just as like a little like self-writing prompt, like journaling, I'm so glad that we did that because I too am an older sister. And my younger sister, she just moved in to an apartment with her boyfriend. She's very headstrong, and I feel like the way I am an older sister came through in Amy's character because she is the peacekeeper in the family. I feel like she is almost a middleman or a translator between the younger sister and her parents. There's a lot of, okay, everyone, like let's move on, or can we talk about something else? Like it's getting a little tense. And I sometimes do that in my own family. I don't know what it is about older siblings or my own particular family, but that has been a really interesting dynamic for me to explore.
Yeah, it's been interesting with, I don't know, this show, with trying not to overact. It's been almost like trying to act like yourself as much as possible, even when you don't actually identify with some of the things that are going on. Like, for example, this is like just a small little thing. Like, already talked about how Richard is talking about this comic book he loves, Quasar, and how he's very specific saying, well, they're half aliens, half demons living on this planet. And Bridget at this point gets frustrated with him and goes, oh my God, just call them monsters. And a little part of me just dies a little bit right there. Because I would totally be like, no, they're half aliens, half demons. Get it right.
You would be on the other side.
I would be totally on Richard's side. So it's those little nuances of, I guess, paying attention to like what other people do, though, of, just call them monsters. Don't be such a nerd. And you're trying to think, okay, yeah, but how would I deliver that then? And to keep it natural and not like, I'm not stepping into someone else's skin. I'm inhabiting my own, but I'm doing things that I normally maybe wouldn't do.
And you're having conversations. So I'm thinking of the complexities of having those natural conversations. Like you mentioned, Rachel, people interrupt and they, you know, put little jabs in and they, you know, go after each other and talk over. But you're also trying to make sure the audience follows. So it's not as if you're in a room with just amongst yourselves. You've got to think of the audience. So how as a director are you helping people to do that?
Right. We actually just this last week really spent some time on that because as they're getting more comfortable, it's interesting. When we first started, I was kind of an advocate for not having as much rehearsal as you normally would have for a show. Specifically because I didn't want to lose that naturalness. But as time has gone on, we've realized how difficult a script like this is as far as getting that timing correct and getting just the memorization even is very different because you're not just listening for one cue. You might be listening for something that's happening
on the
other level, right? Yeah, because there's two. It's literally a two-story set, or there might be two people talking, and yet your cue actually comes from a third person that's talking over here. So yeah, so I definitely underestimated that, and we have been on a regular rehearsal schedule, but just this week we've sort of been pulling out every once in a while and say, wait a minute, this line is really the important line here. So yes, we can be talking on top of each other over here, but we need to stop long enough to hear this whole entire line over here. So that has been kind of an important thing for us to really focus on. And the show, as far as I know anyway, is actually going to be mic'd. So that should help the audience too, as far as just being able to catch everything, because some of the lines do really need to be said quietly. And that's a very big space there.
And the Paradise, though, has done a lot of great things to improve the sound. If anybody has been to past shows, they've done a whole just really, I don't know
acoustic tiles on the ceiling.
Yeah, it's quite lovely.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So, and I was thinking, too, this is a dinner. So not only do we have those complexities, but I suspect you actually have to have food. And do you actually eat on stage?
Yes, we do. We are going to have a full meal eaten in real time.
Yum, yum.
During the show. So we will be coming empty to performances. But yeah, rehearsals. We were miming at first. And then we realized, ooh, it's really hard to take time and chew your food and, like, have those natural spaces. So someone brought saltines one night, and that was kind of the staple for a while. But, man, I cannot eat saltines anymore.
No more saltines, please.
Yeah. Yeah, that does sound like one of the, I mean, just thinking about how dry your mouth gets, like, the last thing you want as an actor.
But it's a nonprofit theater. Yes, budget.
But for the performances, you'll actually have like a traditional Thanksgiving.
We'll graduate beyond saltines.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
That's true. You couldn't afford to produce that every night.
But
nor would you want to eat that much every night.
No. They will have turkey and sweet potatoes and Swiss chard salad, which is a part of the show, and green beans and buns and cranberry sauce. And yes.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, the works.
I just cannot even fathom, you know, how you were going to, you know, manage that, because there's going to be something that's going to slip off the fork, or, you know, a spoon gets, you know, put in the wrong spot. How are you managing all those props and working it so that it's smooth?
Man, I wish John was here to talk about this. Richard definitely becomes like an onstage props master in some way. He preps everything. He sets the table. So I can only imagine what his script looks like with the notes and managing all the toasts that we have, handing out the glasses, making sure we get the right ones. Yeah, it's full on.
Right, because we have, and we have wine, and we have beer, and we have water, and we have Coke, and so, yep, all the different beverages that he has to pour and everything. But it's interesting about the food slipping off your fork or whatever. This play is written in real time. So there are no scene breaks. There's no intermission.
Ah.
It's a one act. So it runs from beginning to end. And I've had to stop every once in a while during rehearsal and say, it's okay. We had an actor fumbling with a prop the other day, and I could see him drop. I literally could see him drop his character and go into himself and be frustrated with this prop. And I said, but it's happening in real time. So there is, if that happens, it happens. It happens to the character, and you just go with the flow. So if somebody drops their mashed potatoes on the floor as the character, it's perfectly fabulous for them to react in that way and get those mashed potatoes off the floor.
And that's what you have to do. And that is a big challenge as an actor. I think that's admirable that you're attempting that, all the juggling all those different things. And, you know, I would imagine that this storyline has prompted a lot of conversations within the cast and crew about, you know, these family stories. And has it something that you've brought back to your own family, things that you've wanted to talk about or brought up? Any things feels like a great conversational opening for people who might want to come see the play and then also bring back things into their own family, or plan for Thanksgiving differently this year.
Absolutely. Well, it was funny, as we were at the beginning of the rehearsal process, we were all sharing stories of our favorite or most memorable Thanksgivings. And as I was thinking about mine, I was like, well, you know, I used to spend Thanksgivings at my grandparents' house, and it was always a very fond memory. If I was just this little kid, and I'd be playing under the table, entertaining myself while all the adults were cooking and talking and catching up. And I was thinking about how over the years, Thanksgivings have kind of changed, like in our family, as people die, people get older, things change. And the Thanksgivings of the past kind of have this nostalgia of who used to be there, what traditions there used to be. Mm-hmm. And it kind of becomes this ghost story of sorts, which I think the play, The Humans, really kind of plays into quite a bit of it's not just the creepy factor of the ghost story, it's the nostalgia of a ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that I had a lot of discussions with my own family, back at home, talking about this show and being like, this is really a neat production, just how it explores those elements.
Mm-hmm. And how about for you, Taylor?
Yeah, the holidays have always been a staple in my family, even as my parents divorced when I was younger. So they just they've always been this shifting thing for me. But my mom's side of the family, they have their set traditions. And even though we don't really have Christmas at my grandma's house because they're getting a little older, and it's really overwhelming. My family is very big. Mm-hmm. My mom comes from a big family.
How many guests would typically be at a holiday dinner?
Oh, well, she has 5 siblings total, and they all have like 3 to 4 kids apiece that are now having grandkids. So it's a pretty packed house.
That multiplies fast.
My sister and I, we are definitely the antisocial ones of the family. So it was always just us kind of in the corner. We would listen to my grandpa play the guitar and just wait for dinner to be served. But we had very specific, like, things served. We always had soup. That was my grandma's biggest thing, alongside turkey. And so just talking about these shifting traditions, because it seems like this play takes place in one of those transition years as mm-hmm. we come to a new point of the holidays. That's one thing I was talking to my mom about a lot, because my sister and I are actually both in the area now. My sister moved up here. She lives in Faribault too. And now we might have Christmas up here instead of down in South Dakota, which will be new again. So just that play has really opened up that discussion mm-hmm. for us.
Yeah, that is fascinating how it does. Some is similar, and you know we've got to have somebody's cranberry sauce or somebody's mm-hmm. special potatoes or green beans with all the whatever they thing, the soup that somebody makes, right? Everybody has a specific tradition, but yet on the outside, all these things are changing and the world mm-hmm. is different. That I love that part about the holidays. How about for you, Rachel, and preparing to, you know, take on this play and conversations with your own family or family memories about special holidays?
Yeah. One thing Frank brought up last night in discussion was how Thanksgiving traditionally is, you know, takes 24 hours at least to prepare all that food, and some families
or
really
maybe weeks to get the tablecloths
exactly.
ready and figure out where everybody's sitting and how you're going to serve.
Yep. And you know, last year I had a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving theme. We love themed Christmases like,
with popcorn and the whole toast.
Yep. So a lot of prep goes into every Thanksgiving. But what Frank mentioned last night was that the actual eating of the meal is such a tiny portion of that.
And you're
that,
right.
Right. And that comes out in our show too, where, you know, we have this hour and a half show and yet the dinner portion is maybe 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, that's just a fascinating thing. But I, opposite of Taylor, have a tiny family. My mother was an only child. I have two sisters and, just in the last 6 months, actually lost my father and stepmother, and my mother's been gone quite a while. So our family is shrinking exponentially. We're very, very tiny. I only have one nephew on one side. And so our Thanksgivings all fit around a table, which is lovely. It's nice.
No holly or choose to separate spaces, the kids' table, the adults' table, somebody's in the basement. We've had those kinds of...
Yep, we all get to fit. So that's terrific. And everybody can help in the kitchen and it's not crowded. It's just a lovely thing. We have a tradition in my little... you know, family, just me and my children and husband, where we, years and years ago, when the kids were teeny tiny, bought a Thanksgiving-themed vinyl tablecloth, and I gave them Sharpies. And every time that they came up with something that they were thankful for, they were allowed to write it on this tablecloth. And it was only out for like the week of Thanksgiving. And so we still have this tablecloth. It has literal drawings that are, you know, infantile drawings from when they're 3 years old to these really in-depth kind of phrases of gratefulness, you know, that have been written in
how amazing.
You know, more close times. So, yeah, it is really a treasure that I continually pull out, and it's really neat. And like Bridget, I did host the first Thanksgiving after I got married. We had the first Thanksgiving, you know, and it was a very big deal. I can remember feeling like, okay, now I have this. I was lucky enough to move into a house right away, but I have this house and I have a kitchen and I'm supposed to like be a cook now. And, you know, all those things that come with married life. And so, yeah, I mean, I had to figure out literally listening to the Splendid Table and the morning of Thanksgiving, like, what am I doing wrong with the turkey? All of that.
That's right, because they do that broadcast on Thanksgiving morning. I don't know if they still do that, but they'll have something. It is such a great transition time, and what a spectacular setting for a drama to take place. And because I was thinking about my own stories, in every family we have, you know, a thing might happen, or there's a funny story or piece of Thanksgiving, but you couldn't really make a story about any one, because not that much happens, you know, in that. But if you put all the things that happen into one hour and a half thing, you'd have quite an amazing story, which is exactly what I think this might do.
Right, right. And yeah, so, it's delightful. Everyone should come.
Exactly. It's the humans, and it opens at the Paradise Center for the Arts down in Faribault, which is super easy to find. 321 Central Avenue, kind of the main street in downtown Faribault. And you can get those tickets online at ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org. Again, it's two weekends, opening next weekend. There is an ASL night, but they have to make a reservation for that.
Honestly, I'm not sure.
Okay. Check with the Paradise Center for the Arts on that. You can give them a call or stop by and definitely get your tickets for this one, because, one of the things that happens is if plays like this succeed, then they get, we get to do more and see more and bring more. So it's exciting to support not just the big musicals or the well-known ones, but to go to these ones that no one's probably seen, and it'll all be brand new for all of us. And I enjoy that very much. It also sounds like the kind of play you could go to multiple times.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of layers.
Definitely. You will pick up something new every single time. We're still finding new things in rehearsals every night.
I would imagine, right? Because you've got these humans are complex, right? And I think that story you told about the monsters in the comic book is really going to stick with me. That's an element that I just love, how you can, you know, put that in a prism and flip that around and play with that a lot.
Absolutely.
And so anything else we've missed about this, the humans or the paradise and things for the characters and the production that we want to share with our listeners?
I think it's just really important to realize that the show is about love. You know, families are families, and there's a lot of crazy things that happen, but love always brings us back around. And so even if any of the other themes don't speak to you, I hope love does, and I hope you come celebrate with us.
As much angst as there is in this show, it really is a love story about this family choosing each other.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like the perfect setup for launching us into the holiday season and trying to figure out, you know, who's going to host and what you're going to eat. That probably starts now, so maybe it's actually like a 6-week time frame.
It probably is. You're right.
And I cannot wait to meet these characters and learn about this play. It feels like one of the ones that could become a tradition, right? You could, has anybody talked about it being made into a movie?
It has been made into a movie, actually.
And it's out?
Just recently.
Yeah.
I think it was 2021, and I think it came out on a streaming service. It was one of those because of all the crazy COVID stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's good enough to be made into a film already, which is pretty crazy because it's only been out a little bit.
We want you to go see the play.
Yes. Come see the play.
Because it's totally so much better to be live. And I'm just thinking about if there's like sweet potatoes and turkey, that we'll have to plan to go out afterwards because we'll get hungry.
It'll smell good in the theater for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And great cast. And I imagine it's just a spectacular piece of work. So congratulations on bringing this to us.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, folks, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. And I'm, as you can tell, really excited about the humans and hope that you'll join everybody down in Faribault to see this production, and hope that you also take time to enjoy your imagination. And, you know, one thing I was supposed to bring today and I forgot, so I'm going to do it off the cuff. I'm hoping that you can find more information. We are currently accepting nominations for the Living Treasure Award through the Arts and Culture Commission, and that deadline is coming up in a couple of weeks. But I know there are many people in this community that are certainly deserving of that recognition. But we need your help in bringing attention to those folks and submitting your application. You can go to the City of Northfield's website and search Living Treasure, and you'll find all the information, or the library and 50 North have applications that you can take a look at. And it's something where you just work on nominating somebody and work with them to put together the list of accomplishments and give attention to somebody who's committed to the arts and culture in our community and has done amazing things to make all of, we have such a great art scene and culture scene in this community. It's wonderful to be able to highlight that, so, and draw attention to that. I promise next week I'll bring the actual press release and get more of the details, but I wanted you to know about the Living Treasure. Folks, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Take some time to enjoy your imagination. And in the meantime, until next time, watch a play.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. 95.